Well, good day and welcome to another episode of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to a show that a bunch of people in our Disaster Podcast group have said they were actually looking forward to. It's not often we have a guest back a couple weeks after we've had them on the show, but this particular time, we had Sam Scheller on a couple of weeks ago to talk about preparations for the Storm Area 51 event and the challenges that we're facing them. And so we're going to have Sam back here on the show. But of course, we can't have that Sam on without first welcoming back the other Sam, Sam Bradley, my co-host. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Jamie. Yeah, you and Kyle did a great job on that. But so Joe and Becky and I will enjoy jumping into the fray here, especially with Becky's disaster management focus. So we'll have to hear how, can't wait to hear how this event went. I did actually listen to the podcast and I was really impressed. You had made a comment, Jamie, that, you know, every time you think you talked about everything, Sam would bring up something else. It's like, oh yeah, what about communications? So, you know, I was pretty impressed with the fact, and also that even if nobody showed up, you had one heck of a disaster preparedness drill. So, hi, Sam.
Hey, Sam.
So that'll get a little confusing, I think. But first,
absolutely.
Kyle Nelson, meteorologist. I saw something flash by on my phone earlier about a blizzard in the Rockies. Did I imagine that?
Heck no, Sam. No, you didn't. This is actually a blizzard coming to the area where I'm vacationing this week, up in northern Montana near Glacier National Park. Getting out of here just ahead of that blizzard, but it's actually one that they've been talking about for several days now, including when I flew into town on Monday. People were already talking about it, even at the rental car counter. So I thought that was pretty awesome. Awesome, just how in tune with the weather folks are up here in northern Montana with now forecast snowfall amounts, especially on the eastern side of the divide, somewhere in the 3-foot range by the end of the weekend. And so that's a little bit here down the domestic side of things. But looking elsewhere around the U.S., we actually had a little line of thunderstorms that rolled through early last week, including one that produced an EF3 tornado near Elk Mound, Wisconsin, that injured two folks when it destroyed a couple of structures. And looking ahead to the tropics now, Hurricane Lorenzo has made some of the headlines. That's going to stay well out at sea, not affecting the United States at all. However, there's Karen. Karen is still around. Karen is still hanging out. It's like that relative who you think is like, oh, maybe they're finally going to leave. And then no, Karen is actually sitting kind of between Puerto Rico and Bermuda currently, more or less stationary, but is forecast to start slowly working its way west, perhaps back towards the southeast coast of the United States. So it'll be interesting to see what's going on. And I'll tell you, the memes for Tropical Storm Karen and Hurricane Karen have been just absolutely fantastic. So if you haven't had a chance to check those out, definitely do so. Becky, anything to add on the weather side?
Yeah, she's actually going to find the snow all the way up in Canada.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited, actually. It'll be a real taste of winter here. We'll see how much we get actually in Banff. I'm thinking probably about 6 inches, but we'll see. Another weather tidbit to add is really the heat that's going to be impacting the southeast. It looks like a lot of records may be matched or broken here in the next, probably towards the middle to end of next week. It's just going to be a really, really hot stretch for the southeast. And the cause of that is a high pressure sitting over the southeast, which is actually what's going to eventually help steer Karen, as Kyle just mentioned, and eventually get that storm moving again. So kind of a lot to cover on all aspects of winter to tropics to heat. It's fall, y'all.
It's a tale of two coasts.
Yeah, and that's why I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask Becky, you know, what was it that's steering Karen? Because you look at the forecast track that the Hurricane Center puts up there, and it looks like it kind of does a little tiny loop back on itself, and kind of then starts heading west again. But it's not moving terribly fast. So I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about the cone of uncertainty and what what that means. There's still really no way to know what that storm's going to do.
Well, no. And so we haven't really seen how the steering is going to impact it yet. We have a general idea, but the biggest issue is going to be what happens when it does start to kind of move over land and into more unfavorable sea surface temperatures. So there's still a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not it'll maintain any semblance of strength. It could move into warmer waters and get picked up. It's just, it's really uncertain right now, as it's a long ways out from being picked up by any kind of steering.
Wow. So, Dr. Joe, anything exciting going on in Memphis?
No, it's actually been pretty nice here the last few days. It's cooled off a little bit, and we've been doing a little training and getting our some new recruits up to speed. But other than that, it's been pretty quiet.
I hear your bird. Say hi to your bird. So, Sam Scheller, I'm sure Nevada is, as it usually is, warm and dry, or hot and dry. So for those that didn't listen to the first podcast yet, you did a great, huge preparatory job for the Storm Area 51 event with no real idea how many people were going to show up. So you are back to explain to us what actually did happen, what worked, what didn't work, your after action report, yeah, if you will. So
thank you for
tell
having
us,
me.
Yeah, just for those that didn't hear the first episode, give us a little briefing on what that was all about.
Yeah, so in July of this year, a comedian, I guess you could call him by the name of Matty Roberts, put up on Facebook a page that basically created an event that said Storm Area 51, they can't stop all of us. They originally called for the storming to take place in Amargosa Valley, and then after some research was done on their end, they figured out that Lincoln County was a better spot for doing the storm of storming the gates. And the whole idea was if they Naturto run, if that's how you say it, which is basically a run where they put their arms behind them and run really fast, that, you know, the bullets for the military can't stop them, and they can get into the perimeter and go see them aliens, is the way they put it. And so this Facebook posting gathered right before the event. Our final count was just over 2 million people confirmed attendance and 1.5 million people who marked that they were interested. So our fear with Lincoln and Nye counties, where these events were taking place, was that even if 10% of those people from that Facebook post actually acted on their actions, we were going to see 350,000 people. And we broke it down even further and said, if we saw a half of a percent, that's still about 18,000 people that we're going to see. And that's 18,000 people, or 350,000 people, or however many people we're going to see, in an area that has zero infrastructure. It's a two-lane highway in and out and throughout the rest of the county. They have one small three-bed emergency room. They have about 20 sheriff's deputies. And so, you know, we looked at this and said, you know, if we get a significant influx of people, we are going to have a major problem.
Well, tell folks about what you do in real life and what your contribution was to this mission.
Yeah, so I am the CEO at Guardian Elite Medical Services. We are an ambulance company based here in Las Vegas, Nevada. We started out doing special event medicine, and last year in 2018, we grew into providing full ambulance transportation. And so with our event background and now with our ambulance transport side of it, you know, we were really proactive with Lincoln County in making sure that there were enough medical resources available in the event that this storm actually happened.
Yes, a storm of, we talk about the weather a lot, but this was a storm of a different sort.
Exactly.
So the big question, what actually happened?
Okay, so what actually happened? So we had roughly about 3,000 people show up into Lincoln County. We had, I believe the media is reporting, 6 arrests. We had 3 transports, 2 by ground, 1 by air ambulance, and a handful of medicals that were at this special event. So really nothing happened.
Well, other than you had a great preparedness exercise.
Yeah, so, and it's funny you should mention that, because in one of my planning meetings with the Metropolitan Police Department, under Sheriff McMahill stood up and he said, if nothing happens out of this, we have had an amazing opportunity to plan and work together and see what we're all capable of doing. And that's exactly what this was.
Joe, you have a question for Sam.
Oh, I do. I think that's a surprising number of transports out of, what's a relatively small response considering what was potentially anticipated there. Could you tell us a little bit more about the details of those responses without compromising, patient privacy, et cetera?
Yeah, so we responded to two rollover accidents. One was on the highway, one was in a dry lake bed. The rollover on the highway had a single occupant that was transported by ground into Las Vegas. And then the second rollover that we responded to had two patients. The second patient that was transported went by ground to the trauma center, and the third patient got flown to a trauma center.
Huh, so all traffic related mostly.
Yeah, nothing. the transports were not even related to the event. They were outside of the event space. Very low number of transports.
Well, I'm sitting here wondering, with your situation where you have two lane highways, I remember years and years ago now, there was a bus full of, I think it was right about in the same place, but a bus full of Girl Scouts that went over the side. And so many people, including media and rescuers, were parked that the other rescuers couldn't get in there. So did you consider the traffic tie-up if something like that happened? And then Joe and Becky both have questions.
Yeah, so we definitely had that as part of our pre-planning. And luckily, we had an incident that occurred, I believe, 2 years ago where we actually saw that happen in Lincoln County. So we were able to kind of gauge what to do in this case. And we were able to learn from that previous incident. About 2 years ago, we had the Highway 15 actually wash out in Moapa. And that led to a situation where all the traffic was being diverted through Lincoln County. And in a 24-hour period, they saw over 30,000 vehicles go through their county. And that led to major traffic tie-ups, bumper-to-bumper traffic. I mean, people were not able to move on the highway. And so we were able to learn a few lessons from that. And so I should say the county was able to learn a few lessons. I wasn't out there, but the county was able to, talk about that case, what they did, how they mitigated some of the things. And so we were able to kind of use those lessons learned from that instance and apply it to these in case we were in that similar situation.
Good deal. Joe, your question.
So I'm fascinated to hear that, the responses were not even related to the incident, the possible incident. I'm also really, fascinated a little bit by the fact that Paragon's done a fair amount of work in that area with military special operations, et cetera. And I think it sort of goes without saying that the military takes the security of those areas out there extremely seriously. And, it's a very long way from any highway to actually get to Area 51. And I'm just kind of curious to hear what the discussion was about in regards to the absurdity, to some extent, of the idea of encouraging a whole bunch of people to go out and potentially assault a military base, and whether or not that really made much sense. Because my sense is, based on my experience there, they were not going to get onto that base no matter what they did.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, you put it a great way. I mean, they were not getting on that base. We pre-planned as a state, as a county, to make sure that that didn't happen. The military was heavily looking at this, and the military brought in their own resources to make sure that they did not go on the base. I don't know, and we really, you know, we don't really know as a whole what the military brought in. But what I will say is that the months leading up to this event, we did see a significant number of military grade vehicles being driven through Las Vegas on flatbed trucks that I was told was going up to that area. We saw Bearcats tanks, and, you know, we can only imagine that those resources were sent in preparation for this event.
And I think, like, I'd like to point out that, you know, the guy that did this, it was always intended to be a joke, that he never intended that anyone would actually do it. And he quickly disavowed it, didn't he, Sam?
So, you know, it's, yeah, you know, it, he intended as a joke. It grew from there. He promoted a couple of events in the areas. And unfortunately, he cut ties with the different promoters in the areas over you know, a host of things. But I mean, even those ties weren't cut until like a week or two before the actual event. So, you know, he was promoting it, trying to get people up there, trying to use his likeness to get people there and promote his event. You know, even though it started off as a joke, I think he took it pretty seriously and kind of found a way to make a few dollars off it and become a celebrity and get his 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, well, as most of these things end up being, it's, you know, they were looking to just have a big party, probably. Becky, you have a question.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, what kind of injuries were you bracing for? Obviously, vehicle, we've already mentioned, any heat-related illnesses. Were you prepared for the potential of actual military force? Was that a potential here?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had to plan, and we were working with emergency management for what would happen if we had any kind of injuries during the storm, if people actually, you know, overcame the security forces and people were shot or less lethal options were used. We were definitely preparing for pepper spray, beanbag rounds, all the way up to gunshot wounds. You know, we were also preparing for heat-related illnesses. We were preparing for just your standard run-of-the-mill, what we see at special events, lacerations, bug bites, things like that. You know, to give you an idea of what we prepared for, my supply order was roughly about $20,000 for medical supplies, and that included everything from IV fluids to chest seals to tourniquets. I think we ended up buying about 50 tourniquets for this event. I mean, we spent a pretty penny to make sure that as a company, as an organization, as a county, we were able to adequately treat anything that came through our medical unit while we were out there.
It sounds not like you have a nice disaster cache now.
You know, that's exactly what we said. I mean, the guys over at Life Assist, or guys and gals at Life Assist, have been great. They offered to refund some stuff for me and, you know, take it back. And I was like, you know, this is all stuff I'm going to use throughout the year. So, you know, we're more than happy to keep it and use it up and you know, just go through what we bought. Because, I mean, in reality, I mean, what we use every day is we just bought it in bulk. So I'm set for supplies for about a year or two.
That sounds good. Well, hopefully you won't have another disaster in Vegas anytime soon. So, Kyle, any thoughts or questions from you?
Yeah, I'm curious, Sam, how, I mean, I really love how you approach it from your side of things, where you kind of stocked up, you prepared, and now you have this supply cache that you're able to use for your operations. But I am curious, though, what about now looking and kind of flipping that onto the local government and local public safety side? Because I've seen a few articles coming out where a lot of the local agencies now that were involved in their ramping up for and the preparedness, not just with the physical and the human resources, but now all these other supplies that were brought in for this, what thankfully turned out to be not such a huge event, kind of how that discussion's going with as far as who's going to pay for all this.
Yeah, so Lincoln County declared a state of emergency. You know, early on, they realized that they were going to be overrun. I mean, even just 3,000 people in their county, they have a total of 5,000 people within their county. So to bring in 3,000 or 10,000 or 30,000, you know, they just don't have the infrastructure. And so early on, the disaster declaration or state of emergency was declared, and that allowed for state resources to come in and back up the county. Here in Nevada, we do have a fund for disaster declarations. The county, I believe, is on the hook for half of the cost of whatever they had to buy, and the state will reimburse the other half. Unfortunately, that has to go through finance, so the county ends up having to pay for everything initially, and then as it gets accounted for and the bean counters go through and see what was for the deployment, what wasn't. And then about 18 months to 2 years later, the county will get reimbursed for whatever expenses they had to come out of pocket for. But like I said, that reimbursement's only, I believe, at half of what was spent.
Jamie.
So Sam, you know, after having talked with you about all the preparations that went into this and hearing you talk about, you know, the supplies you bought and the things the county went through and how they're going to get reimbursed, I'm curious what your thoughts are. Did you meet after the fact as a group, and was there any discussion of, you know, a lessons learned, or do you have any insights as to what would you do if something like this were to crop up in the future?
Yeah, so we definitely all have lessons learned on this. Afterwards, we did have a hot wash with all the group leaders and team leaders, and we were able to sit around and just kind of talk about what we learned over this event. You know, one of the biggest things that the emergency manager, Eric Holt, learned from this event was, if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it. And don't be afraid to ask for things. And also, too, don't be afraid to think outside the box. For example, Eric, the emergency manager for Lincoln County, he was thinking about bringing in a caterer that specializes in fire catering. And that was going to be a significant chunk of change for the county. And about a week before the event, they actually ended up thinking kind of a little more outside the box, how to save costs, how to save money, and went to one of their local diners within Lincoln County, and they ended up having the restaurant was Timbers, and Timbers ended up providing all the food for all the first responders. We had to feed 300 first responders over the weekend, and Timbers did an amazing job of making sure that every single one of us was fed. And so I think that was the biggest lesson for Eric during his hot wash of, you know, if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it, and don't be afraid to speak up. And even I kind of learned a little bit about that. You know, as I was planning, I was kind of hesitant to ask for a few things, but there were some things I needed. And, you know, I said, hey, you know, we need this on the medical side. And they said, absolutely, we'll see how we can get it. And some of the things I got approved for, some of the things I got denied for, and some things that maybe I should have asked for that I didn't. You know, one of the big issues that I learned as the leader of my organization is I cannot sleep with my crew members. And what I mean by that is we were all in a high school gym and I was working the night shift. And so I had to sleep during the day, but even during the day, I was having to answer phone calls and text messages and emails from incident command, from my counterpart on day shift, from employees that were having issues, from my strike team leaders, from issues down in Vegas. And as I was trying to get sleep, it was waking up all my fellow staff members in the gymnasium with me as my phone was going off. And that was one of the biggest complaints I got from my staff members. And so as much as a leader, I want to be there with my staff members. I kind of learned that I may not be able to, given just how I have to run the event. I have to separate myself from my staff.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Of all of the lessons learned, if you had, say, 10,000 people showed up, would you have been able to handle, you know, whatever you might expect in terms of illness and injury and anaphylaxis and whatever else?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we were prepared for 30 to 50,000 people. I mean, that's really what we geared up for. You know, we were ready to handle medical for 30 to 50,000 people in an area that has no medical.
Well, I was thinking, too, you're talking about your restaurant. It's at least when you have an influx of folks into an area like that, if the local businesses can, you know, gain by that, that's not a bad thing. Is there anything that didn't work that you might want to revise or rethink?
You know, one of the things that we quickly had to change was our communications plan. Our initial communications plan relied heavily on using the sheriff's department's multiple repeaters. And it was when we deployed that night, they ended up giving us a UHF Kenwood NextEdge system that the county ended up bringing in that we had linked to different sites throughout the state. And that ended up working out really well. And that was a decision that was made a few days before the event to bring in that equipment to change the radio infrastructure. So, you know, one of the things that I would like to have seen differently is from the get-go, knowing what our communication options were, knowing this new communication option and what our backup system was. We ended up using the sheriff's department system as a backup. But like I said, we had to quickly modify and change our plans because we weren't planning on having that Kenwood system.
Well, something I was thinking about during the first show was, I'm sure you have groups of ham radio operators out there. They can certainly augment, you know, your main bases of deployment there. Kyle, you have a question.
Yeah, to just kind of go just a little bit forward into the comms side of it. I really thought it was fascinating how you said that there was the state resource that was brought in there on the UHF side. And I'm just curious, with all the different agencies and acronyms that were there at play, what was the competition for airtime on these different communication systems? And did they scale appropriately for the incident for what it turned out to be?
Yeah, so like I said, the county brought in a Kenwood NextEdge system, which allowed us to have pretty much region-wide coverage. I mean, we were able to talk from Vegas to our event, from our event all the way to St. George, all the way down to LA. I mean, it was a pretty wide network they brought in. They actually ended up putting up a tower specifically for this event. And so the system, though, they only had one talk route programmed for the responders. And so law enforcement, EMS, operations, fire, everybody, we were on a single talk route. And so, you know, it was fine for about 95% of the communication where we were all able to share one talk route. We did have a couple hot moments where when we responded to rollovers or cars that hit cows and we're checking for injuries, where airtime became a premium. So one of the things that we actually discussed about in our hot wash was pretty much creating more talk groups for the next operation. And as much as great as the radio system worked, you know, we would have had more channels in our radios, you know, or split EMS from fire to police. You know, we would have had multiple channels or had an operations channel and then all the different departments. We could have streamlined communications much more effectively by having more channels. I think we were lucky in the fact that we didn't really have many calls that weekend. If we would have had more calls, I think that definitely airtime would have been a major concern, a major issue for this event.
Jamie.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because, thinking about what you ended up having and what you could have had, that communications really could have caused quite a bottleneck, I would think.
Oh, it definitely did. I mean, when we were responding to one of the rollovers out there, I just simply couldn't key up because we're trying to coordinate where the rollover is. All we know is it's a dry lake bed, 15 minutes to the, to the side of Rachel. We don't know if it's north, south, east, or west. And so we're trying to get highway patrol resources and BLM resources in that area to try to see where this rollover is. We're trying to send EMS units. I'm trying to coordinate with operations and then with my ambulance dispatch to make sure that we've got it all within our CAD system. And so definitely radio time was, when we had a hot incident, it was at a premium.
So, Joe, final thoughts or questions?
Well, I think it, you know, it turned out to be a fascinating exercise. I really do wonder how south things could have gone had 10,000 people showed up on the urgings of a comedian to attempt to assault a military base in the middle of the desert. I just feel like it had bad vibes written all over it. So I'm glad it turned out the way it did and became a good exercise for educational purposes.
You know, and Joe, you know, one of the things that you just said was, you know, a comedian, you know, storming a base. You know, I think the good thing that we had on us was that he disavowed this after he split from all the different events out there. And then he opened up his own event here in Vegas. And I think that drew a lot of people. His event down here in Vegas, I heard, had like a draw of about 5,000 people. I don't think all those were specifically going to go out to Lincoln County, but even if he would have drawn 1,000 people from Lincoln County to his event, I mean, that's still a significant amount of people that we just didn't have because he did a whole separate event down here in Vegas.
Good deal. Kyle, thoughts or questions?
Well, I think it's been a fascinating discussion all the way from having the pleasure to talk pre-plans and pre-incident now to post-event now here. And I guess my final question for Sam is, I really love that how you brought in the local business side of it, but is that something that you may look doing more in future, is partnering more with like local businesses, or how might you bring the local economy into it perhaps a little bit more in future?
So to kind of answer your question, I really don't know. I'm not with Lincoln County, so I don't know how they would engage future businesses. You know, the little alien, which hosted the Alien Stock event, they're talking about doing the event next year. So I think depending on how it goes with county commission and what kind of approvals they can get, you know, we'll kind of see where it goes for next year. But I think if we end up doing it next year, the county as a whole will kind of take a step back because now they know what to expect. They know that we're not going to see the 30,000 people that we thought were going to come in, and we'll be able to handle the event pretty much entirely within itself versus having it as a county or statewide event.
Becky.
I guess kind of a different note. Is there, or could you tell, was there any sort of resentment in having to gear up for these massive influx of people? It's kind of to Joe's point, for something that was, you know, should have been a joke, but turned out to be this real life thing. Like, was there any frustration towards the people that showed up?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you went on the town of Rachel's website, I mean, the town of Rachel completely disavowed this event. They did not want anything to do with it. The residents of Lincoln County, you know, they have a certain way of life that they enjoy. It's predominantly a farming community. Everybody knows each other, and they don't want their way of life disrupted. You know, the county commissioner went on the news saying that, you know, we want you to respect our way of life and how we live out here. And the county as a whole did not want this influx of people. I mean, yeah, it was good for businesses, but as a whole, the residents did not want these events to come through, plain and simple. And in the county commission meetings, I mean, they stood up and urged the county commissioners, the county planners to vote or to deny any permits issued. You know, fortunately, we had some really good county commissioners that were able to see the potential this event could draw. And their question was to these residents, then what do we do with the people? If we get 5,000 people or 10,000, what do we do with them? Do we just let them roam around the desert, or do we approve these events and make and have an area where we can contain them?
Yeah, no kidding. Jamie.
Well, I think that what Sam just said is important, because I've seen a lot of scoffing at the event in general, that, oh, you know, it was nothing, it fizzled out, it was you know, there was no big reason for having any response at all. And as Sam said, you know, 3,000 people, almost doubling the population of a county like that, can have a significant impact even unto itself. And so you just didn't know what was going to come. And at least if they have an actual event, an alien stock event, you'll be able to take the lessons learned here and move forward with it to the next thing. And so I think it's important to use this as a lesson learned, because if we think this is the last viral event like this that's going to happen, you know, look at what happened, as Kyle pointed out in the podcast a couple weeks ago. You know, look at what different areas of the country ran into when planning for the eclipse, and look at what is the next event going to be. We don't know that, but there's going to be some rural area that's going to be overwhelmed by even a small influx of sudden visitors. And so hopefully this lesson can be spread around. That's one of the reasons we do the show. The training and the education that happens here can be taken elsewhere. And you know, as we kind of lead into Joe and talk about Paragon, I'm curious what your thoughts are as to, you know, how does Paragon think about planning for this type of internet memed event? Is this something that you would even consider as a quote unquote disaster trainable event?
Well, I'll have to say, Jamie, that, you know, several years ago, I probably wouldn't have given this a second thought, but it says very much about the power of the internet now, and how, you know, a crazy idea put out to the rest of the world via the internet can become a very serious issue very quickly. And I think, as we've heard on the show tonight, you know, some amazing lessons learned, and a great opportunity to extract those lessons and apply those to a training scenario, so that any small community that's suddenly overwhelmed by, you know, a mass gathering of any sort can benefit from the stuff you heard tonight and the lessons that were learned by the folks that were involved here tonight.
And I have to say that this is not as new as we'd like to think it is, because, you know, this is the 50th anniversary year for Woodstock. And that was an event that a sudden influx of people came into a rural area completely unexpectedly, and overwhelmed resources that the event planners had put in place. So, you know, this is something that has happened in the past. It's not necessarily as new as the internet. And I think that it's something, as Joe, you said, that could be something that people need to plan for moving forward. Just another thing they have to put on their tool belt to be ready for. If somebody wants to talk with you, Joe, let's just say that, you know, they want to do any kind of planning for a disaster in the future, whether it's because they're worried about flooding from the local river, or if it's that they want to just have some fun in doing a disaster planning event that's a little outside of the box, just to let to keep their people engaged. How can they reach out to Paragon to do that?
Yeah, we'd absolutely love to do that. You know, I think we could do a great job planning a Storm Area 51 event, or Storm Washington, D.C., or some other, you know, thing like that. But folks can certainly find us on the web at ParagonMedicalGroup.com. They can reach us through Facebook at Paragon Medical Group, and they can find us through the Disaster Podcast. We'd love to talk to folks and see how we can help them prepare for such craziness as we've heard about tonight.
You know, Joe, I may have to have Santa give you a call. He actually called me the other day, and there's now a Facebook post for Storm the North Pole. Santa can't hide forever. So a little bit out of my area, but I'd love to give you that recommendation.
I love it. Thank you for that. That's awesome.
And actually, I know someone who lives just a few miles south of the town of North Pole, Alaska. It is a place. So, they would be equally, I think, stunned by an influx like this to their area as much as the people of Lincoln County, Nevada are, because I have a feeling they're similar folks set in their ways and don't want to be interfered with. So it's something to keep in mind. I hadn't heard that, but that's kind of funny.
You Sam, know, 26 people like it so far. It's only going to grow from here.
It's a little cooler there, though.
Yeah, definitely. Sam Scheller, where can folks find more about what you're doing in your event planning side, your transport side? I know, you know, Guardian Elite Medical Services, I've watched you grow from when I first met you at Consumer Electronics Show years ago, where you were working the event side for that convention. And I've just been having a lot of fun watching your organization grow to where it is today. How can folks find out more about what you guys do?
Yeah, so we're on Facebook. We have our website, LasVegasAmbulance.com. Like I said, on Facebook, Guardian Elite Medical Services, or Instagram at GemsLV. For anybody listening, if you're interested in seeing what we did at this deployment, we have all of our photos posted on our Facebook and on our website. And also, too, on our website, until October 1st, we are selling our uniform shirts. We had some very special shirts made, and I will tell you, they have been sold all over the world so far. I've sold over 200 shirts from this mission. So.
And I've got shirts for everybody on the regular podcast group here on the call. So I'll be sending those out to you when they come after the orders come in. So I was happy to supply them for the podcast team. I thought that would be a fun end of the year gift for you all.
Aw, thanks, Jamie. Thanks, Sam.
Awesome. And Sam, would love to get a picture for the episode podcast. If you think of maybe one of them that might be a good picture for our blog post, you know, shoot me an email with it. That would be great.
Yeah, definitely check out our Facebook page or our website. Like I said, everything is posted there. And
okay, I can do that.
I'll see if there's something. Yeah, I'll see if there's something specific on my end that looks good. But you know, I'll say take a look there.
All right, I will try to get out. And definitely
publish so people can see what we did.
Becky, where can folks find you?
Folks can find me on Twitter at WX_Bex, or usually hanging out on the Disaster Podcast Facebook page, talking about weather and other fun stuff.
Yeah, and we'll probably be talking more about Karen as the week goes by here from this episode, because I'm sure we'll have more fun information moving forward once Karen decides what Karen wants to do. Kyle, where can folks find you?
Well, Jamie, folks can find me on all the social medias under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. Feel free to follow along there or connect with me on LinkedIn to continue the conversation.
And Sam Bradley, how about you?
Well, where you find the others, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, wherever else, under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, certainly in our disasterpodcast.com Facebook group. And .com website. What about you, Podmedic?
Well, as Sam said, Podmedic is the place you find me in most social media places, and it's great to have you all here listening to the show. Please check us out over on our Facebook group. Just search for Disaster Podcast and ask to join the group. We'd love to have you in there. And we have great discussions. We've had discussions surrounding this event, moving up to the podcast 2 weeks ago. We've had more discussion after the episode came out, and I'm sure we'll have more discussion on this and other episodes. So come join the discussion. There's over 600 disaster responders, planners, lay people, people from all areas that are interested in talking about disaster planning, response, and preparedness all there in the group. Sam, I think this has been a great episode to kind of underline so many aspects of what this podcast stands for.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Sam, thank you for letting us in on this.
Yeah, anytime.
And we'll have to stay in touch for whatever comes next out there.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think I want to, you know, end with that I would really love to see, and I don't know if you guys have the resources to do it, but you know, one of the things I think we should really start researching is just what can we expect from any kind of Facebook post that has a call to action? I mean, you know, what does that look like? I think that's something that's very understudied.
Good point. That would be an interesting discussion. Maybe we can get some of our social media experts to comment on that. Well, this is the first time I've heard of anything like this. Someone just throwing up a post and everybody taking it seriously. But Jamie, all I can say on this is disaster planning is not our everyday planning.